Have you listened to episode 11? Why not? Hey, a big shout out to my big buddy Tom Robinson, who's not feeling so good the last couple of days. I spent some time in the hospital. I hope everything works out for you, brother. And episode 11 featured me sitting with Tom. Listen to the clip, then download the show. So let's talk about it. Well, we started being friends probably because of the Observer, right?
Was it the Observer? I guess that's the connection. I kind of lose track whether I did some tape trading before or during the Observer. I guess Dave brought everybody together.
It's really crazy that the Observer, yeah, even today that we have these guys that we, you know, that are in different groups on Facebook, but it's mainly because we all started tape trading, or there's some kind of, it's got a lot to do. I'm going to probably do a whole episode with John McAdam just about the tape trading thing. But because I was in the Memphis area, I was sending Memphis to you.
Correct. I don't know that I was sending you anything back except cash and some IOUs or some, you know, Kenny Bowen style coupons or something. I had Memphis all the time, which I'm eternally grateful for. But I forget. I mean, I used to tape NWA Worldwide when it would air here. I don't know if you got that. I think I sent you a tape or two in return, but I don't remember exactly. I just found another creepy Southern bastard, and I like hearing Southern guys talk with that accent on the phone. So we became buddies.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there's still a small group of us. It's funny when you say, well, we have met. Hey, welcome everyone. It's Tuesday and it's time for a new episode of Shooting the Shiznit. This will be episode 45, live from STS Studios in St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks everyone for the comments about the countdown and also last week with Van the Man Van Horn. All month long, it looks like we're going toward a record. So what I want you guys to do for the next few days of the month is, plus we've got a total of four more episodes for the month coming to you live from STS Studios. What I want you to do is tell a friend. Tell a friend about Shooting the Shiznit. We do Shooting the Shiznit, and we do the Cool Kids Countdown, and we do Who Wants to Be the Best Shizniter Ever. So tell one of your wrestling friends, that, hey, it's the best little wrestling podcast in the business. I want to thank everyone that listens and everyone that contributes and everyone that posts. And no, I'm at Comic Book Mark BT. We're www.stpod.club. Facebook group is Cool Kids and MMA Facebook group, iTunes, Stitcher. You can go to tinyurl.com/STSpodmerch. We got three new shirts. Count them, 1, 2, 3 from last week. PayPal's Brian_Tramel, T-R-A-M-E-L, at yahoo.com. No further BS except, wait. A big shout out, Suplex City Limits, Creative Control, and Keeping It 100. Now with the program, the show, the Shiznit. Hey, we're here shooting a shiznit. I'm going to bring my guests from the green room. I got milk and cookies and chips and everything, and he's been sitting there waiting impatiently. So come on over. We got Kevin Gill today. Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
What's good, brother? Thanks so much, man. It's always a thrill for me to shoot the shiznit and to do it in a new location on an exciting new platform. I'm geeked. I'm ready. I'm psyched.
Oh, awesome, awesome, awesome. Kevin's got that cool radio voice. Now, we like the radio voice, you know. I remember Jim Cornette told me, he said, as a wrestler, you're a good writer. So you got that. Yeah, that's how good I was in the ring. So,
But that means you're a good writer, though.
I guess I was. Yeah, at the time. Kevin's got, what we do, Kevin, here is I bring on somebody either I've known for years and we just talk shit, or I bring on somebody that I don't know, you know, anything about that I want to talk to. And I seen you on, I listened to you on Conan, and you know, spied out your Kevin Gill Show podcast, and then did a search of you because you was on Conan's podcast. And then I said, this dude sounds like he's had a very interesting life, so I want to bring him on and talk to him for 30 minutes.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Like I said, I'm geeked to be here, and it's always a pleasure to chop it up with, you know what I'm saying, positive, fun people who love wrestling and other cool stuff, man. Let's do it.
All right. Let's first start, and then I'm going to go into some of the other stuff you're in. I've had a couple of questions that people inbox me on Facebook. But number one, let's just start. How'd you get involved in wrestling?
Oh, just growing. I grew up in Queens, New York, and you know, New York City to me was always like the hotbed of wrestling. You know what I mean? Kind of like the nucleus. And growing up back then, wrestling was just a popular thing. You know, when you were at the store buying the newspaper, you'd see all the wrestling magazines. There used to be so many of them. You know, and I was peripherally aware of it, and I would occasionally flip by it on the channels. But then, you know, being there for like that birth of Hulkamania and all that stuff. In the right in the mid 80s when everything jumped off, that was what first caught my attention. The Wild Samoans, Rocky Johnson, Tony Atlas. And then, you know, a short few weeks later, suddenly there's Hulk Hogan, there's Roddy Piper, there's, you know, Junkyard Dog and Paul Orndorff. And then cable came to my area. Then I could see UWF and Power Pro Wrestling and World Class and Polynesian Pro. And I just went full bore into it then. And except for a brief hiatus during the kind of creative dark period of wrestling, ECW then brought me back as a super fan in the 90s. And you know, ECW in the same way was then the precursor. And I don't think they get enough credit for ECW is the fuse and the bomb that blew up to create the Monday Night Wars. You know what I mean? There are no Monday Night Wars without the talent, concepts, production value, creative, and all that of ECW.
ECW, you know, has got a good space in my a place in my heart because, you know, Paul was in Memphis when he first got started. Kind of got to know Paul a little bit, and then with ECW, it was almost like he was a hometown boy, you know. And just Paul was great at what he did, and he was able to take people that no one else wanted to see and turn them into characters, and also turn them into stars. And I love the show too. I really did love ECW. So what? I mean, I know I see you with the referee shirt on. I know you've done some announcing. So how'd you get actually into the business?
It's funny. The way I got into it was. I worked in the video game industry, and
right.
I worked at Rockstar Games, and I had an idea for a wrestling game, and we ended up not making it. And then I went to work at a different video game company, and I kind of had kind of a different idea to do a different wrestling game, and that game turned out to be Backyard Wrestling 1 and 2 for the PlayStation and Xbox. And from doing that, you know, I licensed all the wrestlers. I put together the soundtracks, wrote all the stuff in, you know, the dialogue and the story and all that. But the cool thing for me was getting to meet and work with all these wrestlers and direct the voiceover sessions and all that stuff. So from doing that, I got to meet a lot of cool people like M-Dog, Matt Cross, you know, Son of Havoc and
right.
Josh Prohibition, but also like Madman Pondo, New Jack, the Rude Boy, and Insane Clown Posse and Vampiro and all them. So from working with those guys a bunch, the ICP guys seemed to take a liking to me and stuff from, you know, we had brought them in to do a bunch of different appearances and signings and photo shoots and all that. And I would always make sure they were well taken care of whenever they were doing stuff for us to promote the game. So we would stay up real late at night talking about wrestling or even watching wrestling DVDs and stuff on the road, just kicking it. And they called me up one day and were like, hey, we have this one-off show with Vampiro at this, like, Mexican festival. We want you to be the ref. So I was instantly like, yes. But then, like, after I hung up, I was kind of like, oh, man, like, I've never tried to ref before. You know what I mean? I've studied what
right.
the refs do, but I never did it. And you know how in wrestling you're always supposed to say yes, but then I also felt like I don't want to be dishonest. You know what I mean? So I actually hit up Violent J. I hit him back, and I said, I'm 100% down to do it. I want to do it. I'm committed to doing it. I'm going to study tape and talk to people, but I've never done it. You know what I mean? He's like, oh, brother, whatever, man. We know you're going to school it. So I was like, all right. So I just studied a bunch of different refs from different eras in the different companies, because the different companies kind of had different ref styles. If you look at a WCW match in the, you know, late 80s and early 90s, it's a totally different ref style. In my opinion, there's different little subtleties and stuff. So basically I studied a bunch of tape, and I went and I spent a whole day with Vampiro and ICP and Pondo and Rudy, and those guys just, I mean, they also showed me stuff that a ref doesn't have to do in terms of wrestling, they basically just polished me up a little bit, and I just went out there and did my thing, and I got to ref on the first day I ever refed. I ref for Vampiro in front of thousands of people, you know?
And you didn't shit your pants? Come on now, that's...
No, but I did. I did actually get my almost the tip of my finger got sliced off by the belt, like the championship belt, like caught me at a freaky angle and almost cut the whole tip of my finger off. And they're like, the medics kept trying to, because I know rule number one is the match isn't going to stop. You know what I mean?
Right,
and the blood,
right.
But the blood won't stop either, and it's a lot. So they were trying to, I would like back up and put my arm through the ropes while I was checking on a hold, and a medic would start like taping it up. And then a second later, it would all just be like soaked through with blood, you know? So I ended up having to get stitches just because it would not stop bleeding, and it was near a vein and a nerve and all this shit. But in the end, I was like, oh, that was kind of cool. Like I did every match on the show in that condition because I got cut early on. So that to me was just like a learning experience. And then from there, I did it all over the country, coast to coast with ICP. And then I did it extensively on the independents in California. And that just led to people hearing me talk. I talked a lot in the video game world, in the wrestling world as a ref. Obviously, I didn't talk too much. And one day at a show here in San Francisco, one of the wrestlers, they were doing a sound check on the, you know, they had like a little set up, like a backdrop for people to do promos in front of. So they're like, hey, somebody come here and check this mic. So I went and just cut a promo. And then one of the wrestlers, Dylan Drake, was like, why the fuck isn't this guy on the microphone? And then from there, I started getting booked in little angles, and then the ICP guys heard me doing commentary, and then the rest kind of writes itself.
Yeah, man, I mean, that's just crazy, being in the right place. I want to go back to you talking about being with the video games and doing backyard wrestling. I remember picking up backyard wrestling, you know, you go into the video game store, and there's just a bunch of games that, you know, I'm a cheapskate. I'm a cheap motherfucker. So what I do is I usually wait until that video game has been out for, you know, at least 6 months to a year, and then I come through and pick up, you know, two or three games, and that was one of them. I thought, I mean, that just looks like fun, you know, and it was. I mean, it was fun, and it was totally different. You got to see a lot of guys that you didn't see on the other video games unless you were sneaking one of those Japanese games through the the import games had all the wrestlers on them.
Yes, even like Bruiser Brody and stuff.
Right. You could get Bruiser Brody, Bret Hart. It was funny because you'd get one of the Japanese games and it would have Bret Hart on it, but he was Japanese, you know.
but he did all his moves in that.
Yeah, he did all his moves, yeah. So I played those games and then the backyard game. And then when I started looking through here, how do you get, because one of my things is I've always wanted to either be, you know, a voice in a video game or a voice of a cartoon. Because I've got this southern, twang that would just, you know, it's different. I don't have to fake anything. I could just use it as a cartoon character kind of thing. But how do you get yourself into the video game industry doing, you know, you did design, you got credit for as a writer for two of them, and you did a little bit of everything on these video games.
Yeah, like literally, that was the coolest part. It was mind blowing to me how much stuff that I got to do directly that I would literally do myself, or you know, with a point person or with like a couple of designers or whatever. It was a real kind of a labor of love and kind of a against all odds sort of thing, just because of the volatile nature of how the video game industry could be. Like, I wish that those games were made at a more stable time for the company, Eidos Interactive, you know, who is like former home of Tomb Raider, Hitman, and a whole bunch of other games, including Backyard Wrestling. But it's funny for me. It's just crazy. The way I got into the video game industry was I was a huge video game fan, wrestling fan, and music fan growing up. And when I was still in my, like, I moved out very early in life and just went out on my own, so to speak. And when I was still, like, when I was very young still, like under 21, I guess I was, I started working on, maybe I was around 20, 21, whatever, but I started a record label, like, to put out this New York hardcore music, which was a form of music that I was super connecting with. And, you know, it was a super underground thing. I started first by doing distribution for a German record label. And this sounds crazy, but so yeah, that just kept rolling and rolling. And then I started signing all these bands and executive producing their records. And my girl would do all the graphics and the packaging. And we were doing a whole little thing called Striving for Togetherness Records, or SFT for short. And a lot of that stuff is reissued now by Dignified Bastard. And it's at dignifiedbastard.com and on iTunes and all that. But basically, I was doing those records, and then I fell in love with ECW again during the time while that was happening. So I was putting out hardcore records. I was loving ECW. Video games were still the bomb to me. So I had an idea to do a magazine that kind of was going to be about all three. And I met with a friend of mine, this photographer, and we were supposed to do this planning meeting. But instead, Grand Theft Auto 1, the original game, or just Grand Theft Auto, as it's called, had just come out, and I had been waiting months for it to come out, and we ended up just playing Grand Theft Auto all day. And
instead of making photographs and making plans, we played the game. So yeah,
but it was totally cool, and I was loving it. And then we were lamenting, like, how are we gonna get interviews and stuff with people from the video game industry? It felt like still kind of a more secret world back then. They didn't have Twitter, and they didn't have people to be the faces of stuff, you know? So with that in mind, that night she went down to Manhattan just to hang out, and this dude starts talking to her at the bar, and she's like, oh, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I make video games. And she's like, what? And he's like, Grand Theft Auto. And again, this was when the original Grand Theft Auto came out. It wasn't a big deal. It was controversial, but it wasn't a giant success. You know what I'm saying? It was a super underground game. So I just couldn't believe that of all the people in the world, the guy who put the game together happens to run into the photographer at this bar. They don't even know each other, but now they do. So I got to go have dinner with the two of them and my girl a few weeks later, and talking about hardcore wrestling and ICP and the record label and all this. And the video game guy is all enthralled with my stories. I'm all enthralled with his stories because they're insane. And then a few weeks later, he's just like, you know, basically, I want you to stop what you're doing and come and work for me. And then the company didn't even have a name yet when it started. And then when I started, and then like 3 or 4 months later, they came up with the name Rockstar Games. So I worked there in the earliest days for like the first couple of years.
Wow. Yeah, that's
it was basically my marketing, branding, all those different things that I was doing for my record label that I didn't even know. In other words, I didn't think of it as branding. I just thought, how do we look cooler than someone else? How do we communicate that this record is about this? You know what I mean? And then they, through some weird connection, also were aware of this New York hardcore scene. They had seen the stuff, so it all just kind of came together. But I credited it all to putting stuff out into the world. You know what I mean? Like, if I didn't put out records, I would have never got that job. If I just talked about it or thought about it. But it was physical objects, like things getting put in people's hands, that made it happen, you know?
Right, right. Hey, we've been here for about, this is about a halfway mark. We're going to take a real quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back. I want to ask you a couple more things about video games, and then we're going to get to start talking about some things you're doing now, so. Hey, folks, thanks for listening to this episode, but I want to remind you, we are in the days of summer. That's right, Summer Sizzler Shiznit Giveaway. I want to give away some Shiznit, and I want to give it to you. I have t-shirts. I have lunchboxes. I want to give them to you. So how do you win? Well, you look for a new episode of Shooting a Shiznit, a new episode of any of my podcasts. Retweet them. As soon as you retweet, your name goes into a sweaty baseball cap. That's right, because it's summer. Your name will go in a sweaty baseball cap, and on September the 1st, when it's all and done, I will start pulling names out and giving out prizes. So retweet, listen, shooting a shiznit, win money, Super Sizzler Shiznit Giveaway! Kevin back on here. Hey, Kevin, look, you know, I'm looking at the credits. You went, it was almost 10 years you started with Backyard Wrestling, and 10 years later, we're still doing video games and getting that, you know, I mean, it says KG, your character's on the Saints Row 4 game, and you just take me in. How do you do that? Do you just go in, sit down, follow the script just like you would a movie, or, you know, what's a quick process of doing a voice for a video game?
Well, you know, it can totally vary. Sometimes they have a complete exact vision, or, you know, audio vision, if you will, of exactly what they want you to sound like and be in your mannerisms. They may even have like a reference track of someone kind of doing the character that they want you to emulate or capture. And then on the other side, there's stuff where there's just a few notes on a sheet. And someone might say, oh, something like this. And then you just gotta try to find the character or find the character's voice, you know. For Saints Row 4, they wanted me to be me. But even so, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just want a few parameters, like a skeleton that you can kind of build around. So with Saints Row, I always remember it was at this really state-of-the-art recording studio in L.A., and I was so geeked to be in the game, because there's a lot, the game is like all celebrity voices. Like, I'm not a celebrity, but I'm in a game where a lot of celebrities were voices,
right,
so it's like
right,
a cool rub. And I went into the studio, and I'm expecting through the headphones for them to be like, all right, so, you know, we want like high energy, or, you know, kind of like this, or they were just like, we're rolling. So they just gave me literally nothing at all, not a tip, not a stay back from the microphone, just nothing. And I was like, all right. So then I went through the whole thing, like all the lines for my character, and then then no one said anything. So then I just came back out of the booth, and I'm like, oh, is everything okay, or is the microphone working, because I can't hear you guys. And they're just like, dude, that was incredible, you killed it. Like, that was the easiest take we've had the whole recording session. Like, you're done. And I'm like, oh wow, okay, sweet. I thought I was checking the microphone, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
But in a totally good way. Like, it felt good to step into a position like that, because, like I said, one of the biggest things I've learned is that sometimes the biggest, most elaborate productions, or going into a bigger world from a smaller world, it's often not nearly as different as you would expect it to be, and all the kind of shortcuts and extra work and due diligence that you do on your own independently when you have no one, if you bring that mentality into a bigger production, I think you thrive a lot better, because you really have your eye on the ball of you're never going to fall victim to, oh, well, so-and-so didn't do what they were supposed to, and now the whole thing's falling apart, because you kind of know enough to be able to track it.
Right. I love the idea, too, earlier you was talking about, you know, you sit down with, you know, video game people and you talk wrestling, they say they're wrestling fans. I know it's one of those weird things where if you go to a party and your wife introduces you, or she makes mention, hey, you know, he used to do wrestling, or he did wrestling, you always have that one guy that pulls you to the side that says, hey, man, do you know Ric Flair, or do you know? So I was, you know, I was always a cool guy that was able to say, hey, you know, Jerry Lawler's, you know, his sons are a good friend. One of his sons is a real good friend of mine, and you know, I know Jerry pretty well, blah, blah, blah. So that was always fun to, and you find those people because of wrestling or because of video games, they seem to find you so damn interesting when you couldn't have anything else to talk about with this guy that, you know, that works on, not really Wall Street, but, you know, works in a bank.
Anywhere, right.
So,
a dental office, or a garbage man, or an electrician, or a law enforcement.
It's always that one guy you never expect that's going to, you know, listen to ICP, and they go, what?
Amen,
wait,
brother. I'm constantly surprised. Not surprised.
Yeah, tell us about that. Now, you mentioned those guys, and I'm not going to ask you the stupid question that's the most asked question about ICP. So we're
awesome.
Not going to ask that, okay? And everybody's going to say, what the hell was he talking about? But if you don't know the most asked question about ICP, then you're not an ICP fan. So here we go. How did you – I mean – You know, you look at those guys, and they are the, to me, they're the Kiss of this. That's the way I looked at them when I first started listening to them, because I was a huge Kiss fan. And I grew, you know, I'm 51 years old, so I grew up in my first album was Kiss Alive, and they were, you know, my group, you know. And so soon as I seen ICP the first time I saw those guys, I was like, oh, they're, you know, Kiss, they must have loved Kiss, they got makeup, boom, boom, boom. And then, you know, I listen to some of their music, some of the other bands that's with them and kind of thing. And their music's not really my music, but I can see the... I could see why other people listen, you know, and how the appeal is there, and to use the gimmick, you know, the actual ICP gimmick is so fucking over, you know. How
right?
How over is that, you know? And how did you meet those guys and get involved with those guys?
Well, it's crazy over, like it's a dedicated fan base, but it transcends a traditional performer and fan relationship because of this whole, like, it's really like a Juggalo family. The whole Juggalo community that support ICP are like basically widely misunderstood, and there's all this stuff that goes on with the FBI classifying them as gang members. But
yeah, that's,
to
that's
me
what...
ICP are like the American dream because they're two childhood friends with like grammar school educations or you know, didn't finish high school educations, who grew up in broken homes in the poor section of Detroit and built a massive empire, never lost sight of their friendship, their roots, who they are. Unlike Kid Rock and every other famous person who just gets the hell out of Detroit, they still live there and hold it down. And my first exposure to them was through wrestling, was through their Strangled Mania tape. And I used to watch that tape like a million times a day. And I was like, man, these guys are literally the funniest guys ever. This is the best wrestling commentary ever. And that and my interest in ECW, you know, what ECW popping off in like 96, they both happened at like the same time. So those two products to me are like interwoven together. And I always thought like, man, I feel like I would get along really well with these guys, which is a weird feeling to like, I don't normally feel that like that I connect with something so much through a performance, you know?
Right, right, yeah.
But then I started buying their records and stuff shortly thereafter, and I ended up meeting the guys through sheer chance. Like I wrote this TV commercial for Rockstar for a game called Monster Truck Madness, and it starred Kevin Nash. And I went down to Atlanta to film it at the power plant of all places. and then one day at Rockstar, one of the guys who worked on the shoot came in to pick up their check in New York City. And I had, like, I always forget, it was either a Mick Foley shirt or an ICP shirt on. Well, it was a Mick Foley shirt, because he's like, oh, my God, he's like, I'm filming a movie with that guy right now. And I go, you're filming the ICP movie? Because I knew ICP was in Manhattan filming their first film. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm the director of photography. You should come down to the set. So I was like, all right, cool, I'll be there. Like, what time can I come down? Like, I'm just going
right,
immediately,
right, yeah.
You know? And I got to go meet Violent J and his brother Rob Bruce, Jumpsteady, that day. And then it wasn't that much longer later, maybe a year later or so, that we started talking about making the Backyard Wrestling game. And it was just through that. And then those guys, through working with them giving me the opportunity as the ref and all that, even though I was starting to get some mic time and stuff around the indies, it was those guys who said, we're going to put you on the commentary team. It's going to be you and Shaggy Two Dope are going to do all the commentary for our events. And that, to me, that's just like the ultimate, because that's like my favorite commentary duo ever, you know?
And they have the big event, what, once a year?
Oh, yeah, the Gathering of the Juggalos.
That's right. Now, and are you always there?
Oh, yeah. Like, I haven't missed one since the first one I went to in, I want to say, 2003.
So if I decide to come, you're going to take me to the beauty contest?
Yeah, I'll be there hosting it, brother. Yeah, that, the Miss Juggalette pageant. Disco calls it a beauty contest.
There you go.
It is, in fact, a Miss Juggalette pageant.
It's a pageant, not a contest. What was I thinking? Yeah, that,
everybody
hey,
wins.
Yeah,
so
there
to speak.
We go.
But there is only one first place winner. But that's such a cool experience too. Like last year, Vice Magazine filmed it and did a little documentary on it. This year, it was out in Oklahoma City. So Vice didn't film it this year. But I know Fagel Lovers and some other sites did film it, if people want to check it out.
Man, we've almost spent the whole 30 minutes not talking about wrestling. Can you believe it? That's okay, though. let's put your shit over now. I usually do it at the front, but let's go ahead and you I know you got a podcast, and as I always put over Conan's podcast on my show because I'm actually a big mark for the podcast, and my friend JoJo, the producer, believe it or not, I know JoJo. Me and him's been knowing each other for about 3 or 4 years, and so I want to put the support there. But let's put over your podcast. How can people listen to it? And put over the Conan podcast for us.
Sure, man. Well, each and every week, I sit down in person, face to face with whether it be a breakout independent wrestler, a WWE Hall of Famer, someone from an awesome band, the occasional comedian, top shelf guests in person on the Kevin Gill Show. It's on iTunes and Audio Boom and everywhere podcasts are heard. I mean, first-time listeners, the three-part interview series with X-Pac is incredible. The MVP episodes are awesome. Any of the Chris Hero or now Cassius Ohno episodes are great. The Young Bucks, Kevin Owens, Matt Riddle, Finn Balor. I could just on and on and on. Disco Inferno and Conan, too. So check out the Kevin Gill Show if you want to get a taste of just a Colt Cabana-style, long-form interview with that sweet in-person sound. And then every week I chop it up with the very disrespectful Disco Inferno and the highly unhappy, emphasis on high, Conan, K-Dog himself. We form the most unusual crew in podcasting with nuclear-level ball-breaking and worked heat that is shoot heat that is, yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, I said it right. Worked heat that is shoot heat. But we put it down on a podcast like no other with a very unique format, a format I think some people are now starting to appropriate, but always go with the innovator. Keeping it 100 is raw. It's crazy. It's long. And there's something for everybody on there. Music, politics, pop culture, lots of wrestling. And Disco and Conan get into it. I get into it with Conan. Me and Disco fight each other. I mean, verbally, because I don't fight wrestlers. So that's what we do. And, of course, I'm on Twitter at OG Kevin Gill and at Kevin Gill Show. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and all that. I got a merchandise store at dignifiedbastard.com, which also has some records and DVDs and other things. And like everybody, I've got a pro wrestling tee store and a Patreon. So I encourage the listeners of Shooting the Shiznit, if they enjoyed this, if they want to get deeper into the Kevin Gill experience, check out the Kevin Gill Show. It delivers positive mental attitude directly to your ear holes, which, as you know, feed directly into the brain pan, which nourishes the brain canal.
There we go. Now, that was a hell of a promo, guys. I don't know if I could have done any better. I know I couldn't. Hey, man, it's been fun. I do appreciate you coming on. I want to ask you one last question here. Now, I listed some of the Conan stuff, and I see some of the Twitter stuff. Ryan from Pro Wrestling Sheet. Now,
clearly,
what's your opinion of Ryan?
I like Ryan Satin a lot. I think that Ryan gets very, and I'm guilty of the same thing. Ryan gets worked up sometimes about Disco, as I do, because Disco does contribute good things, but he also says some really outlandishly, like, stuff that makes you mad. Like, he's living a troll persona 24/7, but sometimes I think he gets lost in it. So overall, I like Ryan. I think he's a highly respected, incredible journalist and all that. With that said, he gets caught up and he gets shrill. Like, no. Like, he brings like a yelling and an urgency to the show that is not there without him. So I think that's a good thing. You know what I mean? I take it you're not a fan of
No, I am. I just, you know, from afar, I like to watch. I see all the stuff that, let's say this about Ryan. He's very, very passionate about wrestling and about what he believes in, and that's what I love about his Twitter. If there's something there that he believes he wants to comment on, he said something, I guess, 2 or 3 days ago that he used to never tell people that he liked wrestling until he found Twitter. And I thought that was a hell of a thing because, you know, a lot of people do that. A lot of people in that have another job – do something else, they hide their wrestling. You know, it's almost like sure. everyone's a closet wrestling fan, you know. Or that's that guy that watches, you know, I've got a friend that always says, you know, I was switching the channels and Raw was on last night. And whatever. What the fuck ever, you know. You was watching Raw, so you knew exactly what was going on. But Ryan's that guy, you know. He's really passionate. And that's what I really like about the show is that even though I may not agree with, you know, Disco or may not agree with anything you, Ryan, or whatever who says, you guys can tell you love the business as much as I do. So that's the reason I don't put over a lot of podcasts because there's so many fucking podcasts out there. So I'm just like, if you're listening to my 30-minute one and you're listening to Conan, then that's, you know, that's all you. And now the Kevin Gill Show. And Kevin, me and you, when this goes off the air, me and you are going to do some negotiation because you've had the Young Bucks and you've had all these people that I'm big marks for, you know. So you're going to have to share some phone numbers. Now, hey, guys. Thanks for joining us today, and join us every week here, every Tuesday, for Shooting the Shiznit, the best little wrestling podcast in the business!